Now, On Point with Stuart Kaplan and Chris Pi Hoda.
How are you, my friend?
Hi, Stuart. How are you doing this evening?
I got to tell you, I'm losing sleep. The trajectory of the United States of America is keeping me up at night, Chris, to be quite frank with you. Your old nemissary, your old boss, Chris Wray, as you know, made an appearance before Congress and obviously is sounding the alarm bells. It just seems that it's not resonating with anybody or anybody's really paying any attention to it. And when I saw yesterday, after Iran attacked Israel and all of this anti-Israel rhetoric and protesting, they closed the Golden Gate Bridge, they closed bridges in New York City and throughout the United States. And what is being missed is these same people are saying death to America. And I am really worried that there is a significant population here in the United States, maybe 50%. And I say those people that somehow are supporting these open borders, you see these people protesting. They have come into the United States. They are indoctrinating our younger generation. They are certainly creating havoc. They are changing the fabric of the United States. And so, Chris, am I crazy to say that the United States has been invaded? That actually, you know, you always think of that the United States, aside from 9/11 back in 2001, really hasn't had an enemy combatant come here, you know, a full out war, you know, set. But I look at what's going on now. Are we just ignorant to understanding that these people are here amongst us and we are at war because of our open border policies?
Well, I'll tell you what, you and I both spend time with the FBI. And, you know, I used to meet with the director daily to talk about these kind of issues before I retired. And these problems, many of these problems, I'll say, are of our own making. They're of our own making, whether it's from the open borders, the unvetted immigrants, the world events around us that we are either sleeping at the wheel or mishandling. We have Middle Eastern warfare going on. You said the Iranian attack on Israel, which is a first, where they launched an attack from their own soil. We have a lot of social friction right now. And as you mentioned, there is a growing I call it a leftist movement in this country where they are anti-American, they're divisive, they bring more friction, more discord. Anything that was traditionally an American value, they now hate and want to tear down. They don't have any solutions. They just don't like anything that's going on. And we've effectively allowed criminals, gangs, potential terrorists, foreign operators, and other people of ill repute to enter our country. I saw a note today where I guess ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they're HSI now out of DHS, the Homeland Security Investigations. But they arrested four people in Boston. They're all illegal immigrants. They're all part of gangs, and they're all up there. One of them, at least, was accused of child rape. And these are the people we're allowing into our communities. So I hold a lot of concern when it comes to the health and welfare of our communities. And our elected officials, they do nothing right now, and it's shameful.
But, you know, Chris, and I understand that the most important constitutionally protected right, the greatest fundamental right that we have here in the United States is our First Amendment right. That is our right to protest, to stand up, to oppose, to give our own opinion without fear of retribution or without fear of reprisal. Just like you and I are having this conversation, you know, quite frankly, we may offend certain people, but our fundamental constitutionally protected right is we can basically voice our opinions. What is concerning to me is that the United States, which really stands for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the fiber for which this great nation stands for, the land of opportunity, it has, it's recognizable, meaning that you understand what the United States is and what it stands for. But, you know, and Chris, and not to change direction, but in looking at an issue last week in Seattle, Washington, and you're going to think that I'm making up this story, where a group of women who participate in line dancing, cowboy dancing, a line dance competition, they show up for this competition and their costume or their uniform is a T-shirt. And printed on the T-shirt is the flag, the American flag. And the organizers of this competition went to the head of this group and said, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to change your costume or your shirt because it's offending some of the people or may offend some of the people that will be attending in the audience. Chris, I can't make that up.
No, it's ridiculous. And I think, you know, when you have a group of people who are offended or some of them even say they're scared by the American flag, I'll tell you, we've become a society of hypersensitive wimps, people who think that everyone has to accommodate their feelings. And I'll tell you, just in recent history, while people say that the flag triggers them, you know, whatever woke nonsense that is, there is nothing that you want to see more when you're in trouble or if you're scared or if you're in danger than that American flag. And you, there's nothing more you want to see than people wearing that American flag, whether it's our soldiers, our law enforcement, our first responders. So when they come out with that just absolute silliness that the flag triggers them because of, you know, whatever nonsensical reason they give you. Like I said, it makes my stomach sick when I hear these people. They're just, like I said, hypersensitive wimps, and they just like having other people cater to them. And it's stupid.
But Chris, this scenario that unfolded this week with Israel under attack, where Iran for the first time openly launches over 300 rockets attempting to pierce the Iron Dome into Israel. And it would have, I mean, there would have been mass casualties throughout the state of Israel. And the fact that Israel, and a lot of people don't really appreciate, and you know this because you participated in those FBI programs, Israel is our greatest ally in the Middle East and certainly probably the best at gathering intelligence. And while the United States doesn't want to overtly admit how closely they work with Israel and how closely they rely upon the intelligence and the Mossad and how the United States works together with them, the fact that our sitting president in this day and age has the gall and took the position to suggest that Israel in no way should do anything in any sort of way to respond to that attack, it's just unbelievable. I mean, in this day and age, the United States, the president should have come out, stood in front of a podium, whether someone has to literally hold him up or prop them up, because, you know, it probably is impossible for him at this point to stand without any sort of assistance and certainly without a teleprompter, but they would put a teleprompter in front of him. And he should have said that the United States stands shoulder to shoulder with Israel, and whatever Israel needs to do to protect its state, the United States stands with it and will participate and assist them. This idea that the United States is so weak, what message is it sending to the rest of the world?
Well, that weakness enables this type of activity. There's no deterrence from the United States' strength and power that there once was. They see us as being weak. We're distracted. We're ineffective at managing these issues right now. Our federal government is more worried about peripheral issues than they are about managing these types of world points of conflict. But they're more worried about social nonsense here in the United States.
But Chris, it used to be where, oh, it's something that's overseas. It doesn't really impact my life, my quality of life here in the United States. What about, and I always say this, what about those people that were going to work, going across the Brooklyn Bridge or the Golden State Bridge in San Francisco, and all of a sudden you have a mob mentality of people that are crying out death to the United States, death to America, and anti-Israel rhetoric. What about those people that were stuck in their cars, that whether they had children in the car, whether you're by yourself, you're just minding your own business, a normal, typical day in California, New York, wherever it is, and you have people that think it's okay to do that? Chris, let me ask you this, because you had the pleasure of sitting with so many directors during your tenure with the FBI, and the last one is still the director, Chris Wray. What do you make of how many appearances that he has made recently in the last year, year and a half, and certainly this last appearance where he really is banging on the alarm and saying, hey, folks, not only are we concerned about what's happening overseas, but he goes as far as to say what happened in Russia last month, where these individuals broke into a theater and created havoc and a mass shooting and killed over 100 people that were attending, some theater production. And he says that he knows, the agency knows, there are people, operatives right now in the United States that are in the planning stages or ready to carry out an attack like that. Why is it that we're not getting so much concern from the general public or from our president? Why is it just being poo-pooed?
I think people are numb to it. Honestly, they're distracted. How many times can you come out and tell everybody that there's a heightened threat level? If everything's immediate, nothing's immediate. If everything's important, nothing's important. So I think that the FBI is putting out what I would consider to be warnings, but it's also a bit of cover my tail. So if something happens, they warned everybody. But for me, what I'd want to hear, if I was the public, which I am now, I suppose, what exactly are you doing? What actions are you taking? Who are you partnering with to make sure that our communities are remaining safe? We let all these criminal migrants, criminal aliens into our country. And again, a lot of the folks could be potential terrorists or operators from other hostile nations. What exactly are you doing to protect our communities? And these are the conversations that we used to have. I don't know what they're having now, but there should be all calls going out to all field offices. There should be directions, requirements. They should be having weekly, if not bi-week or twice a week, briefings on what's going on out there, especially around some of the, I would say, higher vulnerability areas in the United States. And we used to have meetings where they would get all of the partners online. We would put a message out, all the partners would log in and get briefed, and we would tell them what we knew and what we believed was the threat environment. So I'm not sure what they're doing now. Hard to say, Stu, but
yeah.
Right now, I'll tell you one thing, besides the cover your tail, I mean, I saw the FBI saying, yeah, there's a lot of threat environment right now. Everything's, up in the air, red lights flashing. And of course, now they need more money, right? They're asking for funding. And so, I'm just not sure what their focus is right now. Did you see where the FBI also recently, they opened a criminal investigation now on the Key Bridge incident?
I saw that. Do you believe that someone on that boat has been identified as maybe being a sleeper cell or someone that may have nefarious intent?
I don't know if they're looking at criminal activity or criminal negligence, right? Where they knew something was wrong on the boat and they still tried to move into the harbor, or if there was actual sabotage or an act of, terrorism. So yeah, but the FBI decided they were going to now, open a criminal investigation. Yeah. So it would be interesting to see how that resolves. Hey, one more thing, Stu, before we move on to some other items. did you see in your former home state of New York, where now they have, I guess, hundreds, at least hundreds of migrants are formed up around the city hall in New York City, demanding benefits, and they want their green cards and work papers, and they're just they've mobbed the whole area.
Yeah, and you know what? And and I'm a New Yorker through and through, but I have given up any sort of empathy or sympathy for anybody who continues to live up there. And that, quite frankly, is because you voted those idiots into office that condone that type of activity. Because I will tell you, in my heyday, Rudy Giuliani, who was the greatest mayor ever to serve in New York City, he literally would direct the New York City Police Department with the fire department and sanitation department, and literally with a garbage truck. And I know, here comes the hate mail again, in concert with the police department, the fire department, and the sanitation department, would literally pick each one of those people up and get rid of them and transport them, right, or transfer them somewhere else outside New York City, or bring them back to an airport and give them a one-way ticket back to wherever they came from.
Well, I don't think America's mayor was so much worried about offending criminal aliens as much as he was of taking care of the citizens of New York. One of the things also that from what I saw was the migrants are also upset because they're being moved out of the luxury hotels and being put into more, I would say, appropriate shelters. And I guess that was another point of contention.
Yeah, Chris, I just think it's outrageous. And I cannot for the life of me understand any person that lives here in the United States. And when I say lives here in the United States, I'm talking about an American. And just so I'm clear, so hold off the hate mail, anybody who is a United States citizen or anybody who is here because they are pursuing the American dream, that's the group that I'm including, that how can anybody not be for borders and for upholding and enforcing the law? I can't understand why anybody would be against a process. If you want to come here, show your intent, show your, you know, why it is and what it is, and we'll vet you and we'll make sure that you are not a criminal, not a former rapist or gang member or someone else's problem child. And then we'll put you through the process to get here. It may not be today or tomorrow or next month. It may be a lengthy process. And by the way, most people that I know who have gone through the immigration process, it could take up to 7-8 years. It's a lengthy process. But I will tell you that each one of those people that I know that has gone through the process will kiss the ground that they walk on appreciating and never, ever taking for granted the life that they now are privileged to enjoy living here in the United States. And yet we just throw it down the toilet now and allow all these people to come across the border. I can't understand it.
I think as Americans, we don't appreciate the privilege of being an American, but people who come from other parts of the world do. I saw another interaction. There was a person who is a known gun control advocate. He was speaking, and a lady, she was a Chinese immigrant, naturalized U.S. citizen, asked him about gun control, and she said, look, I lived through communism. I lived through all these things. I watched people die, you know, from communism. How can you guarantee, or can you guarantee us that the United States government will not become tyrannical? He said, I can't guarantee that. And she said, all right, then the gun debate's over.
Yep.
That's it. That's it. And she said, I will never give up my guns, knowing that where she came from and where she lives now with the freedom and the security that we offer in this society. You know, these gun control folks, they just don't appreciate other people in the world live in a very unsafe, tyrannical, or I would just say unfree society that we enjoy, and people take it for granted here. And that's why they say they hate the United States, but they won't leave, but they hate it here.
And not only not leave, but they'll, you know, take advantage in yeah. any capacity whatsoever. And by the way, mm-hmm. anybody who, you know, disagrees or anybody who says, oh, you're too harsh, you're not sympathetic. Listen, go to the emergency room at any major city in the United States and see what it's like now to get treated in an emergency room and see the amount of time that you will wait 12, 24 hours just to get in and be triaged. And basically they'll tell you if you're still breathing, I'm sorry, you're not a priority, right? So, and that is directly related because they're taking care of all these extra people that are here in the United States without, you know, without having, you know, a system that can maintain this. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, it just shows you again, we're starting to break down as a society. We are overextended in our infrastructure. We can't take care of everybody yet. We keep inviting more people in. And, I go back to the lack of wisdom and lack of capability of our elected officials now. They operate by emotions and feelings and slogans and buzz phrases. They're not looking at the overall health and welfare of our communities, and it's a shame.
Yep, I agree with you. I agree.
Yes. Hey Stu, do you want to talk a little? Just talking about society. You want to talk a little bit about this situation in Chicago? We had another law enforcement shooting fatality. Individual name of Dexter Reed. I'm sorry, and you know, he had an interaction with the police. Traffic stop. Supposedly he wasn't wearing his seatbelt. His windows were tinted heavily, according to reports. He wouldn't obey the police officer's commands. And then, according to reports, he fired first at the police officers. They returned fire. Sounds like they returned heavy fire. Approximately 100 rounds were returned, according to the assessment of the scene. But what do you think of this? We had five officers there.
Yeah.
Hey, but I'll tell you one more point, though. It's just that of those five officers, none of them were on the force more than 5 years. So you had a relatively, I wouldn't say junior, but they weren't very senior as far as police officers go. So what do you think of that?
Listen, you know, again, the video is released. There's an absolute knee-jerk reaction to assuming facts that are not there. It's automatically made a racial issue. It's automatically made a Black Lives Matter issue. It's automatically made a George Floyd issue. It's automatically made cops are bad, criminals are good, and we need to defund the police. Yet no one wants to address it's a criminal in a car wearing a mask. By the way, you left that out. Normally, other than COVID, you know, wearing a mask, but hey, he's wearing a mask. He has an illegal gun. He discharges his weapon at the police. So let's just talk about, you know, the savory character of this individual who thought nothing of firing his gun at uniformed police officers. Now, then you have the idiots who know nothing about what it's like to be in a firefight. And especially when bullets are going downrange at a car, when they're pinging off the car. And quite frankly, and most people I wouldn't expect to know this, that at some point you may perceive that that someone also is continuing to fire at you because those projectiles may be ricocheting back in your direction. You have five police officers that are all trying to neutralize the threat. It's very hard to discern good guys from bad guys. I believe there were 96 rounds that were dispersed. You know, to me, listen, other than thank God and by the grace of God, there wasn't an innocent person that was shot and killed or injured by so many rounds being sent downrange. Mm-hmm. But I don't use that as a measure to say, oh, bad police, you know, bad conduct, they're bad guys and they were trying to assassinate this guy. No. It's a kid in a car with an illegal gun who was out for no good. And he decided that he was going to engage a uniformed police officer and fire at that uniformed police officer. And that's the end of the story. And everything that happened after, it may be open for a post-incident review to say, You know, how could we engage this in a better scenario to alleviate some potential danger to the general public or to, you know, innocent fire, meaning, you know, God forbid we hit another officer, all of those things. But let's stick to the facts of that particular shooting. What happened? What's bad there?
Well, I think what you're looking at, too, is, as you mentioned, with the amount of rounds being returned, you know, it's referred to a lot of times as sympathetic fire, right? I'm hearing gunshots, whether it's my own people or whether it's the adversary, I'm hearing gunshots, and people will continue to fire from that sympathetic response. The only thing I would say is that in an urban environment.
And by the way, Chris, but let me interrupt you for our viewers. You're using a term that I understand and you understand. You're not using sympathy, meaning in the way that we're feeling sorry. No. I want you to explain what you mean by the perception of gunfire.
Yeah. The sympathetic response is you hear gunfire. You can feel gunfire. You're scared. And when those other rounds are firing, you will continue to fire because you feel as though there is still a threat present. Until the firing of the weapon stops for some reason, or someone gives a ceasefire command, people will tend to continue to shoot as the sound of gunfire continues. It's a sympathetic response, meaning that it's like breathing. It's like things that are involuntary that you'll do as a response or a reaction to the situation.
Very well put, Chris.
So, but hey, let me throw this at you too, Stuart. You know, we're talking about the urban environment and the amount of fire that went through. And when you're looking at the police officers, you know, I heard somebody say one time, and he put it very well. He said, every round that you send toward a target in an urban environment, it has only four places it can possibly end up. And he said, one, intended target; two, unintended target; three, private property; four, public property.
Yeah.
He said those are the only four places that it could end up. So when you're having that kind of a firefight in a urban environment, I mean, the safety of potential bystanders and other folks becomes, like you said, an after action issue. They're going to look at the judgment. They're going to look at the control that the officers could have, or some will say should have employed. But again, Monday morning quarterbacking on that one.
But let me just throw this at you, just so the viewers understand why it is that we take this position, because it was either the same day or the next day, two upstate police officers. I think one's a sheriff's deputy and one's a local police. So I think it's Schenectady, New York, or somewhere up in Syracuse. They were shot and killed engaging a bad guy, and they lost their lives. And it just goes to highlight, here's two guys on the job, going to work, you know, just a typical day, and they don't go home to their families because a bad guy snuffed out their lives. So it's a dangerous job.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what part of the problem is. I think a lot of folks in the public, I think they underestimate the stress of the situation, but they also forget that action will almost always beat reaction. And when the police are required to take fire before they can defend themselves or put out a defensive action, they're likely going to lose.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Stu. Talk about the societal impact here. I saw that the decedent's mother was on TV saying he was just riding around in his new car. This shouldn't have happened. He shouldn't have been pulled over. They're saying it was a illegal car stop or an unconstitutional car stop and all of these types of things. What do you think this means for community relations with the law enforcement folks in Chicago?
Well, look, I mean, just like any major city, whether it's New York City, it's Chicago, it's Los Angeles, you know, unfortunately, community relationships have to be established when things are going fine. And unfortunately, you have this type of situation where it's leaked out or it's put out into the public domain. and everybody wants to, you know, feed or fit their own agenda for whatever their cause is. And I always revert back to, you know, the biggest clown of them is Al Sharpton, because he would be the perfect individual to jump on something like this if it happened in New York City and immediately make it a bad cop scenario. Cops are all bad. We don't need the New York City Police Department. And it's a black-white issue. It is not a black-white issue. And by the way, Chris, and just for everybody listening, I've handled some of the most prolific cases here in the state of Florida on civil rights violations. I know what I'm talking about. And I can tell you that most of the time, if not all the time, when a police officer makes a bad decision, it's because he wasn't properly trained, or he shouldn't have been a police officer in the first place, but it's not because on that particular day he decided that he was going to get out and target this particular person because of their race or their religion or their gender. He's just a bad cop and made a bad decision. And probably, and this is one of the things that I brought up with Jennifer Brashear last week, as you know, Palm Beach Gardens had a terrible shooting involving one of their officers several years ago, and where a African-American, Corey Jones, unfortunately was shot and killed. And by the way, it was a terrible case, and the police officer rightfully was fired, rightfully prosecuted, was rightfully convicted, and is now spending a very lengthy prison sentence. And as you recall, I commented on then Chief Stephen Stepp, the then police chief of Palm Beach Gardens. He didn't hesitate. He didn't vacillate. He didn't wait. He took immediate action to terminate that police officer. What I say, unfortunately, is too often the police department is more concerned about protecting the individual police officer when they even know the police officer was not within his right or did something wrong or, you know, did something illegal. And that is one of my criticisms, and I'm steadfast on that. Everybody should be held accountable. In this particular situation in Chicago, it's a terrible situation, and I think what happens is people will now seize the opportunity to burn the city down or just create, you know, race baiting. And that's unfortunate, because the men and women in law enforcement in Chicago, believe me, they go out each and every day. It's a very dangerous job, and they want to help the community, not hurt the community.
No, I agree. And you mentioned training, and you mentioned, I would say, disposition, right? The disposition of the police officer and the training they receive. I'd like to know how often they qualify and how often they are provided with, I wouldn't say tactical training, but I would say scenario-based training, so that when they are in that situation, have they been exposed to it, at least on a learning level, if not a pure tactical level? So I don't know about the training evolutions that they provide for those officers. They were supposedly part of some special unit for, you know, enhanced crime enforcement. What do you think about the culture up there? I think culture plays a big part of it. I think the culture of the organization overall, and then the culture of the subdivisions, whether it's the precincts or the squads or the special programs. I think culture, are you there to protect and serve? Are you there to try to rub out the criminals? Are you there to, what are these people, what is their operating protocol? What are they taught? And I think a lot of that would drive how they respond.
I agree with you. I agree.
So another unfortunate thing, I'm hoping we don't see a George Floyd 2 as we start moving toward the summer. The nation doesn't need it. I don't think those communities need it. I'm hoping that, you know, after the investigation's done, that they can get a good idea of what happened and make sure that it was done by the book. And it was, I hate to say a good shoot, but a within policy firearms engagement
and a justifiable shooting. I mean, that's it. I mean, that the officers are within their authority and they can justify the use of deadly force. That's what it is. You know, and Chris, not to harp on this any more than we are, but I haven't seen one article or one news story on why this person in the car was in possession of an illegal gun. See, no one wants to address that. And that is really, that should be front and center, because that's part of what's going on there in these major cities where people who are criminals have guns, and we need to address that.
Well, I think, again, it goes back to that declining United States culture. We're not the high trust, high security society we once were. Yep. All right. Well, let's move on to your favorite part of the show, Stu.
All right. Let's go.
All right. We got a little bit of speed round here for you. Try to put out some interesting factoids for our audience. Tell me, what is the number of fatal police shootings in 2024 to date?
When you say, and forgive me, officers killed in the line of duty or?
No,
or
fatal police shootings. Like the police used force.
And resulted in the death of someone. Mm-hmm. I would say 400.
265.
Okay.
As of April. What about 2023?
I would say that I would think they would fall in line statistically. So you said this year 263. We're not done with the year yet. So I would round it up to, let's just say, 300 shooting. 300.
For 2023, all the whole year, you were close. You were on the right track. It was 1,163. So if you round up to 300 and take the four quarters of the year, you've been right at 1,200. So that was some good math right there.
All right.
All right. So let's look at it this way. How many police interactions were there estimated in 2023? Overall, in the United States, wow. How many police interactions were there?
That's got to be a staggering number. I'm going to throw, oh boy, I would say 150,000.
About 54 million.
Wow.
Police interactions across the United States.
I knew the number had to be staggering. That's unbelievable. That is right. Documented police interaction.
It's approximately because wow. You know, some people report for different sure. things, but approximately 54 million, those come from Department of Justice. And can you guess what the percentage is of people who were satisfied with their interaction?
You know, so I've talked about this and I always say, you know, most people, fortunately, the only interaction they ever have with a police officer is, you know, generally getting pulled over in their car.
Right.
And it's easy to say the cop was an ass or he wasn't friendly or he didn't give me a break. He should have given me a warning or I was wearing my seatbelt or I wasn't using my phone. And so everybody drives away all pissed off. And fortunately, most people don't have to interact with police officers. But I will say, and this is a percentage. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
The percentage.
Percentage satisfied with their interaction.
I would say, I would like to think that 80% of the people that interact with law enforcement are pleased with that interaction.
That was a great guess. It was 88%.
See?
Good job. See,
there you go.
All right, last one. How many law enforcement interactions had a use of force?
Well, since I know a little bit, well, and so that's where it's a little difficult because how do you define the use of force? Some people would say just grabbing someone's hand to place handcuffs on them may be a use of force, but I will take it in the vernacular where it would be hands-on or the use of baton, right. The deployment of a taser. How many in the United States?
Percentage.
Percentage of the 54 million?
Yep. How many of them had a use of force?
Wow. I'm going to say if we have 50 states multiplied by towns, cities, and wow. I'm going to say there were 100,000.
Give me a percentage.
Okay. Out of all police interaction, I will say 10% represent the use of force.
2%.
Thank you. See, I feel great.
And, yep, 2%.
And you see, people, I would bet you would think it's much, much higher.
And, agreed. And I think it depends on where you live.
Sure.
And I think it depends on the environment that you live in. There are some people that never have an interaction with the police, and every one that they might have is always a pleasant one. And every other places, maybe some of the more urban environments, it's gotcha. Always a negative and it's frequent, right? So, you know, I think it's something we got to keep in mind that people around this country live in different environments. So, Okay. Well, I think, how are we doing on time, Stu? I think we're probably running short.
We're running short.
Okay. Well, let me do the closing gratitude and give you the last words as usual. I'd like to thank everybody. Again, we kind of a law enforcement centric discussion toward the end. So we want to thank our law enforcement officers, always our first responders, military, people who keep us safe, as well as everyone who helps keep our society running and working every day. So, Stu, thank you for the outstanding speed round tonight. You did a great job on the math. So I will let you have the last words as always.
No, I just want to thank our listeners and our viewing audience. The feedback has been outstanding. And even some of the people that throw a little hate mail my way or to us, it's fine. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I just will say this, that we are appreciative of anybody who is participating, and we welcome your comments, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Stu. Have a great night.
You too.
Thanks for watching On Point with Stuart Kaplan and Chris Pie Hoda.